You are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. The opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent those of the management of KUCI or the UC Board of Regents. For more information about this show, go to kuci.org. This is Tina Spindler, and welcome to In the Garden with University of California Master Gardeners. I'm here with Katrina Kirkby to talk about what to do in the garden in October.
How exciting.
I know. I can't believe, gosh, the year is almost over. We're into the fourth quarter of the year. Hard to believe.
I know. And it's October, and it's a huge planting month.
Huge planting month.
Huge month, period.
Yeah. This is probably the busiest month in the garden for me. And we want to help our listeners know that it should be the busiest month for them. There's so much they can do this month.
It's exciting. It's a really exciting month. It's going to get cooler.
It is. It's been getting cooler. We've had some cloudy days and even a little bit of sprinkling going on here and there towards the end of September. And that was a welcome relief from the super hot 90-degree days. And as the days get shorter and the weather gets cooler, but the soil is still warm, it turns out that that is an ideal time to plant things in Southern California.
At plant cleanup, it's a huge month. Where do you want to start, Tina?
Well, I think let's start because it is basically a planting month. And yes, you clean up as you go along, but let's talk mostly about planting and transplanting and digging up and dividing. Those are all things that are related to planting. And let's start by talking about, instead of veggies, which we often talk about veggies first, but this time let's talk about our decorative gardens, because I think that's probably where the most work is this time of year.
Okay. Where do you want to start?
Well, first of all, it is a great time to plant pretty much anything. So any shrub, any tree, and any perennial, except for tropical plants. So you don't want to plant the tropical palms, hibiscus, that sort of thing, or citrus. Citrus is better planted in the spring because it likes the warmer weather. The only thing that we don't usually plant in addition to the tropicals is the bare root stuff, because bare root season doesn't come along until the end of December or January. But otherwise, anything in a container that you buy at the nursery, it's a great time of year to plant.
And it's nice temperature to be outside, too.
It is. Now, we can get those horribly hot Santa Ana conditions in October, so be aware of that, because when you plant, don't choose a day that it's going to be hot or the wind's going to be blowing, because that'll be stressful on you and on the plant. And so if you plant on a day and then inevitably 2 days later we get Santa Ana conditions, just be sure that you give a little bit of extra water and monitor that plant. And even I've gone so far as to pound a couple of stakes in the ground and drape a shade cloth over the new plant that I planted, just to give it a break if we get those, you know, 90 degree Santa Ana wind days.
Those Santa Ana wind days could just be horrible for well-established plants.
As well.
As well.
Yeah, much less brand new ones. What would you like to plant? Well, if you need, say you need some new vines, it's a great time to plant a vine. I love to have vines over patio covers, and if you have trellises over any of your windows, or I know I have a couple trellises over my French doors, and they need a couple of new vines this year. What I had planted there just got old and didn't do well, so I'm really looking forward to planting some new vines. You know, there's great vines, trumpet vines, potato vines, all different kinds of things. So do a little research on the internet if you want to plant some vines. And you can plant roses, too, if you like the climbing roses. It's just you would be planting those from containers right now, not from bare root stock. So vines are great. And then, of course, virtually any shrub, it's a great time to plant shrubs. And I've always, as you probably know if you listen to the show, am such a flower-holic that you would think I don't ever plant shrubs, but I actually do because they're the mainstay of a garden. When you don't have things blooming, you need to have some, you know, nice structure and green in the form of your shrubs.
You know, we have a master gardener by the name of Kay Havens, and she told me that. And I'm like, well, I don't want shrubs in my front flower garden. But when everything else dies, they're there.
They are.
Yeah, and they're kind of hidden when everything is blooming, and when they're not blooming, there's at least something there.
Exactly. And they're, a lot of them are bulletproof, and some of them flower once a year, so that's an added bonus. You know, Raphiolepis is a great shrub, bulletproof, and it flowers once a year. But also, you know, the pittosporums, you know, as you know, maybe we think of those as kind of boring green shrubs, but they give you that structure. They give you a backdrop for your blooming plants, and they are bulletproof, and they last for many, many years.
Well, you know, I'm thinking about this right now, camellias.
Mm-hmm.
I have some camellias that they don't bloom most of the year, but they bloom when nothing else is blooming. And they're beautiful, and they're tall, and they give some structure. And when everything else is blooming, they're just this great, great plant that gives height and depth. And when everything else is not blooming, they start blooming.
That's a great point, because the Sasanqua camellias bloom in the fall, and the Japonica camellias bloom in the winter months. And those are two times of year that typically there isn't a lot blooming. So you're absolutely right. They are spectacular when they're in bloom, and then the rest of the year they just give you this nice green backdrop that is a nice foil to display the rest of your flowering plants.
Well, I had one, and I planted two more because of you, Tina.
Oh.
And now in the winter, I have these and it's real. It's like cost effective, right? Instead of going to buying flowers, or if you don't have enough, I put these camellias in bowls, glass bowls of water, and I could put 4, 5, 6 throughout the house. And then if I have company, I put it in the bedroom, and because there's so many blooms, and you just go and snip. It's an easy thing to do.
That they are gorgeous. Just one blossom. And you're talking about the Japonicas, just one of those blossoms can be 4 to 6 inches across. And if you just float one in a bowl, or if you have a long container, a long bowl, float two of them, or if you have a big punch bowl, you know, float 3 or 4 in it, it makes a gorgeous centerpiece, and they're just stunning. They last, gosh, they probably last, what, 4 days or so?
Even longer. I've had them for up to a week.
Yeah,
in a week they're kind of...
The edges are browning.
Yeah, but if you have house guests or you're having a party or something, you don't even have to arrange flowers.
Right.
You know, it's like quick. You're like, oh my gosh, I don't have flowers. You go out and you snip 6 of them and put them in 6 bowls and put them through that house, and you're done.
Right, right.
It's very cost effective, and when they're not blooming, they make a pretty hedge.
They make
a pretty foundation plant.
They do. And some others that are similar to that would be gardenias and azaleas. They are also acid-loving plants. The camellias love acidic soil, which we don't have. But if you feed them appropriately, then they thrive and survive quite well. Also, a couple of notes about those plants. Be sure that you're choosing ones for the exposure, the sun exposure that you have. Some of the azaleas are shade azaleas, and some of them are sun azaleas. Same with camellias. The Japonicas tend to want a little more shade, and the others will take more sun and be happy. So definitely consider those plants, but consider any shrub. Just, you know, go to a local nursery, see what they've got. And while you're looking at the shrubs, the next category we want to talk about are the perennials, which usually have a life of 3 to 5 years. I mean, any plant that has a life of more than 1 year is technically a perennial. But when we're talking about blooming flower-type perennials, they usually have lives of like 3 to 5 years. You know, one of my favorites for here is lavender. Do you have any lavender in your yard?
Oh, I have lavender.
Yeah. Yeah. And another one of my favorites is all of the sages. You know, there are some annual sages, but there's gorgeous perennial sages. One of the most common is the beautiful Mexican sage, the Salvia leucantha. That's blooming in my yard right now, and it's stunning. It's just this purple cloud.
You have to have room for it, though.
You do. Well, actually, there are some dwarf varieties that only get to be about 3 feet tall, whereas, you know, the one I have is the one that when it blooms, it's like 4 or 5 feet tall.
Yeah.
But stunning.
And it grows. I mean, mine just takes over, but I love it because it's usually blooming when nothing else is.
Exactly.
And it's just pretty, and it blooms for a long time.
It does. It blooms all fall, and then I got planted some new ones last year, and I noticed that the ones I planted last year have bloomed repeatedly. So I think maybe they've bred some to perhaps bloom more than once, whereas it used to be they would just bloom in the fall.
I don't know what I have because it was planted so many years ago.
Yeah.
But it blooms for a lot of the year. I mean, it's blooming now, and it'll bloom well into the new year.
Yeah.
And it's just it's been blooming for a while, even in the summertime.
So you get a lot of bang for your buck and with the Salvia leucantha.
We planted this one little plant many years ago, and it's huge. And we have it in a place where it could take over, but it's just, you know, you walk down our hill and you walk in our backyard because it's now on both sides of the fence, and it's just stunning.
Yeah, I love it. Another thing that's bulletproof that gives you a type of color, it blooms, but it isn't grown for its flowers, is flax. Do you have any flax in your
garden? No, I don't.
Yeah, I added flax a few years in mine, and I chose a variety that was maroon-ish, brownish maroon, with kind of pink stripes on the edge of the leaf. And so all year long, I have, you know, that plant, which is kind of a vertical structure, and I have it mixed in with the Salvia leucantha, which has that grayish-green foliage, and then the purple flowers when it blooms. And so think about textures and contrasts when you're choosing new shrubs to plant, because I love the combination of that purplish-brownish foliage with the pink stripe against the gray-green foliage of the Salvia leucantha with the purple blooms. You know, it's just you've got these different colors going on, contrasting, and these different shapes going on. And the cool thing about the flaxes is you can get them in different sizes. So the ones I have, unbeknownst to me, ended up being tall varieties. I apparently didn't pay attention, so I had to move some of them. But you can get miniature ones that are even great in pots.
Oh, so much fun.
Yeah, so there's no way we can cover all of the different shrubs and perennials that you could plant, because there's just, you know, thousands of them. But it's a great idea. One of the things I suggest to folks is walk around your neighborhood and go to some other neighborhoods that you think are really pretty neighborhoods and look at the plants that the people have and take pictures of the ones you like, even if you don't know the names of them, and then go to a good nursery that has good plant people who could identify them for you.
You know, that's a great idea. I've done that before, and even combinations, because I'm not great with color and balancing it out. And there's sometimes you see something that's just like it's balanced out and the contrast is so beautiful. And I've taken pictures and I didn't know what they were and say, I want that.
Yeah.
You know, will it grow in my yard? And it's nice taking it because some of those things will not grow in my yard or where I want to put them. But also for those of us who are color impaired, you know, it's true. I mean, Tina, you had a great sense of it, but, you know, I don't. And I just take that and I'm like, wow, I like that. It's beautiful. It makes it pop instead of blends together or fades together. Sometimes if you put two different plants together, they will pop and it makes each one look better.
Absolutely.
And so taking pictures, if you are not landscape architects, taking a picture of somebody's yard, you know, most people are fine with that. Just take a quick snap. I want that.
Yeah.
And then you could say, take it to your nursery, a good nursery, and say, will that work in my yard? And tell them where you want to put it. And sometimes it won't work where you want to put it, but sometimes it does, or it'll work someplace else. But it also gives you an idea when you go into the nursery thinking, oh, I don't want it all to blend. Maybe some contrast is good.
Absolutely.
So it starts your creative juices going.
Yeah, it really does. And then the other thing to do, in addition to planting new things, new perennials, new shrubs, new trees if you want, that you purchase at your nursery, is to take a look in your own garden and see if you have anything that needs to be dug up and divided, which I know I do this year. And those types of plants, for instance, would be what I need to dig up personally are the bearded iris. They tend to form a big clump, and the clump gets bigger and bigger, but the plants actually get smaller and the blooms get smaller. So if you dig that clump up and cut it into pieces, each piece having a little fan of leaves on it, and then you replant those in a more spread out area, they will go back to being very vigorous and you'll get your big blooms again. They tend to get kind of crowded and don't have enough energy, so to speak, to develop those big blooms. So it's a good time of year to divide Dutch iris. If you have daylilies, good time to dig those up and divide them. Same with bird of paradise. And even, you know, I talk about Shasta daisies a lot, and poor Katrina, I've foisted some off on her because they're one of my favorite perennial
I love
plants.
My you guys don't have Shasta daisies and you have room for them, get them.
Yeah, and sometimes
I still have mine from before I knew Tina. Somebody got them from Tina's yard and gave them to me.
Yes, I love pastel plants.
And they're wonderful.
Well, the reason I like them is they're bulletproof to grow, and where I live, the bunnies don't like them because I get a lot of rabbits in my yard. So if you live up against open space, it's a great plant that blooms. And the other thing is that the clumps also tend to grow, and they tend to self-sow. And so the reason Katrina has them and half of my other Master Gardener friends have them is because when they're getting too big or they're growing between the cracks of my stepping stones, I dig them up, put them in pots, and I share them with other people. I don't even spread them in my own garden anymore because they're all over my garden at this point. But it is a great plant that gives you flowers that you can cut. They're just the simple little white daisies with the yellow centers, and they're just, when they're not in bloom, it just looks like a nice green ground cover.
You know what else I like about them is that they're easy.
They're so easy.
They
don't get eaten.
They don't get eaten, and I like them because they're white. And, you know, my husband brings me flowers to plant, and he likes every single color.
And me too.
I do too. But, you know, it's like he'll just plant them all. And I have those white daisies, so whatever he plants, it's kind of separated by those white daisies, and they look really nice.
It's a great design strategy because you can have a lot of different colors in your garden. If you have, you know, the one unifying white color that you take throughout your garden, then it doesn't look like it's a big jumble. You see some continuity because that white is flowing all the way throughout the garden.
I have to say, I think my Shasta daisies are one of my favorites.
Oh, good. I'm so glad.
Me too. Because, you know, they're easy. Your life gets busy. And they separate. I mean, they don't take a lot of attention, you know, and they break up other colors. And they bloom for quite a while.
They do. Yeah. They bloom. They start like the end of April, beginning of May, and they have their biggest bloom through May and June. But then the rest of the summer, they're still putting out, you know, a couple of blooms here and there. And then I just noticed mine are starting, now that the weather's cooling again, I'm getting a little bit more of a flush of bloom right now. So they're stunning in the late spring, early summer. And then they're a little more sporadic. But even when they're not blooming, like I said, it's this beautiful green ground covery look that really doesn't get chewed up by snails or rabbits. So it's really nice. And particularly if you like roses, I have them planted. I have a lot of roses and I like the Shasta daisies for planting around the, you know, edges of the roses because they don't seem to interfere with the nutrition needs of the roses. And it gives you that nice green ground cover all year. And then, of course, because they bloom in May and June when the roses also bloom, it just looks like a riot of flowers with the roses and the daisies at the same time. It's just spectacular.
You know what? I think I'm going to do that right now.
A few more roses, yeah.
Well, I have roses and mystic spires.
Uh-huh.
And I think what I'm going to do now, since I'm going to divide what you gave me. Move some over, because how pretty is that? It'll be red, white, and blue.
There you go. It would look nice with the mystic spires.
And, you know, the roses and the mystic spires look really nice, but now adding some white and large, they pop.
Yeah.
Oh, now you've given me a gardening project for this month.
Cool. So anyway, let's talk for a second, since we talked about a lot of planting and gave a few specifics of what to plant. Let's talk about how to plant, just a real quick refresher. We've talked about it before, but if you're new to gardening or haven't listened regularly, we'll give you the down and dirty quick version. For any plant that you're going to plant, you want to dig a hole twice as wide as that plant is. So if it's a 1 gallon pot, twice as wide as that. If it's a 4 inch pot, twice as wide as that. And then you want to mix in some fertilizer, all-purpose fertilizer. And you want to, perhaps if your soil is very clay-like, mix in some compost so that the compost breaks up and loosens up that clay soil. Then go ahead and put your plant, take it out of the pot, loosen the roots, always loosen the roots down at the bottom. Too bad it's not TV, because...
She's got, what I learned from Tina years ago is she tickles the roots.
Tickle the roots. That's what we tell the kids when we...
You tickle the roots.
When
you break.
Working with kids.
Or my husband.
Or your husband. There you go. Yeah, because husbands tend to tear roots, and we just want them to be gentle. So
they're manly. Yeah. Let's break them up.
So tickle the roots, loosen them up. If you need to put a little bit of the amended soil that you made back in the pot, back in the hole, do that, because when you put your plant in, you don't want it to be sunk in the hole. You want it to be even with the surrounding ground level, or maybe even a half an inch higher, because often when we water, sometimes it tends to sink that plant in. So I like to put the plant in just a little bit higher than the surrounding soil, backfill with that amended soil that you made, and then water it in really well. I sometimes will make a little water well, which is just a ridge of soil outside what we call the drip line of the plant. So for instance, if you planted a nice shrub, say it was a camellia, and you planted it as we just discussed, and you want to make sure that the water gets directed towards those new roots, then you can build a little earthen wall of soil just a couple inches high that is right outside the drip line, which is where the leaves end. We call that the drip line because if it was raining, the water would drip off the leaves right there. So build that little earthen dam outside that drip line, and that way when you do hand water, the water's not going to roll off to some other area. It will stay located where the new roots of that plant are. You don't need to keep that watering well there forever. The first month or so of its life, it will last, and that should probably be sufficient, especially this time of year, because we don't get super hot weather, and we're going to get our rains.
Hopefully. So, Santa Ana's rains.
Yeah.
You don't know this time of year what you're going to get.
But that's one reason why the October planting is such a great time, is because hopefully when we do get rains, whether they're a lot or a little, these plants get to take advantage of those natural rain events and the cooler weather, and really get their roots established in the ground, so that when March and April comes, boom, they are ready to bloom like crazy.
You know, you plant now, we've talked about this, this is such a great time to plant because the soil is warm, and you plant them, and these little guys are going, oh, it's friendly. You know, in springtime, the ground is cold, and they're not expanding, but right now they have time to take root. I mean, literally take root. And they're happy, and the weather's warm, the ground is warm, and then you have all this wonderful, hopefully this year we'll have a lot of rain. And the rainwater, there's nothing like rainwater for
it's
our plants.
It's better. It just is better. They
it's
love
lower
it.
You know, yeah. The salt, the whole thing. So if we can give our new plants rainwater. It's wonderful. And, you know, different years, I turn off my sprinkler system for months at a time if it rains like every 10 days. And it also depends on what I planted. You know, it might need water more than that. But the rainwater is just such a blessing. You know, I don't know about you, Tina, but when we have a good rain year, my fruit trees are going, my flowers are going.
Oh, everything's happier.
You know,
everything.
Irrigation's one thing, but rainwater is a nice thing.
It really is. It doesn't have the salt content that our treated water does, and the plants just love it because it washes the salinity out of the soil.
I can even tell on, you know, when we have low rain years, my avocado trees, the leaves get brown.
Yeah.
And when we have good rain years, they don't.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's just too much salt when we have low rain years, and then I have to use irrigation. So let's hope we have a good rain year.
Exactly. Well, before we leave the decorative garden, I do want to talk about just two more things. So far we've talked about trees, planting trees, shrubs, and perennials. But the last two items that we can plant in our decorative gardens are our annual flowers and my personal favorite, the spring blooming bulbs, which you actually plant in the fall in California, and they actually bloom in the winter in California, pretty much, winter and early spring. So let's talk about those for a sec.
Oh, she's getting excited.
Yeah. So the bulbs that are great to plant this time of year and should be stocked in the nurseries, the better nurseries, would be anything in the narcissus or daffodil family. Daffodil's a subset of narcissus. And those range from little tiny ones that only get 6 inches tall, 4 to 6 inches tall, to tall daffodils that are approaching, you know, 2 feet, 18 inches, 2 feet
really?
Tall. Yeah. They bloom generally. Some are called early season, mid season, and late season. So I like to get a variety of them. You can also Google the ones that naturalize here in California and choose to plant those, because then they come back every year and you don't have to plant them. And so those are some fun ones to get. What I don't plant here is tulips. I know everybody loves tulips and they are beautiful flowers, but they do need to be chilled, and I am too lazy to chill them in my refrigerator for the appropriate amount of time. And then the other thing that's a drawback to me for tulips is you only get one flower per bulb. And I'm a flower hog, so I prefer plants that get multiple flowers per bulb.
You know, and tulips are beautiful, and if you're willing to do it, I tried, you know, a couple times, but, you know, you forget about them. You know, they're in the refrigerator, and then you get busy doing other things. And
you can't have apples in the refrigerator with them because they give off a gas that is not good for the tulips and can inhibit bloom. So anyway, I personally don't plant tulips. If you want to, just either buy them pre-chilled, which you can do from some mail order companies, or chill them if you have like a bar fridge that you're not going to put apples in that you could, you know, stash your tulips in. And what I have done is I have done just a few, and then I put them in pots. And that way, when they bloom, you know, they're in a contained, concentrated area, and I can put them right at the front door, you know, where everybody has to see them for the short time that they bloom, which is only a couple weeks.
And then you have to time it, because I've done that before, and I haven't had company.
Oh, darn. So just you got to see it.
I mean, I love seeing it, but it's like sometimes you want something to bloom for a while.
Right.
You know, our lives are busy, and it's like, oh, I had company here and there, but not when I had the tulips.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh my goodness. You know, so it's up to you.
Yeah, so up to you. If you just love tulips, go for it. The other ones that I personally love, though, are the Dutch iris. They are stunning. They come in yellows, purples, blues, and they're just awesome. They will also naturalize, so I really recommend those. They look stunning in bouquets. And then my favorite, which is actually a corm, not a bulb, but you plant it similarly, are ranunculus. I love ranunculus. They are just these big pom-pom flowers in the most magnificent colors, bright rose, red, yellow, orange, purple. And they just, I just love them. They kind of look like peonies. If you don't know what a ranunculus looks like, it's a very densely, they have hundreds of petals on each bloom, and they're just gorgeous. And we have the flower fields where they're were originally grown for production down in Carlsbad area, so you can actually go see them in bloom next spring, March, April.
It's kind of an interesting thing to do.
Fun field trip, yeah.
It's a fun field trip. You could take your kids and you could walk through the flower fields. Oh. I don't remember what they charge to go in there, but
acres and acres and acres of them. They're just stunning. But I have to take a quick break and let everyone know that you are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. And that the opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent those of the management of KUCI or the UC Board of Regents. For more information about this show, go to kuci.org. So back to bulbs. So daffodils, Dutch iris, ranunculus, freesias. Do you ever plant freesias, Katrina?
You know, I used to.
Yeah.
But you know, my yard, I need to have something big.
Right, and they're low-growing. But a lot of our listeners have small yards.
Small yards, and they're beautiful.
And they're very highly scented.
And I love the smell of them. I just absolutely love the smell of them. They're just beautiful flowers. And, you know, and if you have them at your entry or underneath a window.
Or even when you bring them in the house, they're great cut flowers. And you put a couple in a vase, and they'll scent an entire room. They're really, really highly scented. They're from South Africa, and pretty much any bulb from South Africa does well in California because we have a very similar climate. But they are, some of the South African bulbs are hard to find. These are commonly available in pretty much every nursery. And one tip, though, for the freesias, plant them in between other flowers because they tend to flop over when they bloom and end up laying on the ground. So I like to plant them, like, in between snapdragons because then as they start to lean, they're leaning up against a snapdragon and the flower is not laying on the ground. So, yeah, love those. And then the other thing I plant are anemones, which are a fun... Not Japanese anemones, although those are great. Those are fall bloomers also, but they're not a bulb. But just the St. Bridget anemones are a corm, and those are fabulous to plant. Come pretty much in shades of pink, blues, blue-purpley color, and reds. Also great. All of these bulbs are great cut flowers. So get bunches of those. And plant them when you plant your annuals. And the annuals that you want to plant in the cool time of year are, as I mentioned, snapdragons, stock, another highly scented flower. Do you ever plant stock, Katrina?
I love stock.
Oh, so pretty. Plant that under your bedroom window. That just smells heavenly. Let's see, what else? Calendula and larkspur. Any others you can think of? I'm off the top of my head, I'm kind of drawing a blank. But anyway.
You're hitting all my favorites.
Hitting your favorites. Oh, good, good. Oh, pansies, of course. Pansies, viola, those are great. All of these are great in containers. I would suggest if you have flower beds that you do try to look for some of the tall varieties. There are tall varieties of stock called Imperial Giants, some of my favorites. And there are tall varieties of snapdragon. Rocket is one of my favorite. And the reason that's one of my favorites is rocket is somewhat resistant to rust. And if you've ever grown snapdragons, you know they're susceptible to a fungal disease called rust. So rocket gets to be, gosh, 2.5 to 3 feet tall.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
And what was it, Imperial what?
Imperial Giant stock. So those are some of my favorite annuals to plant. And like I said, what I do is, you know, the area where you're going to plant, the annuals, you generally dig up the whole bed and turn the soil and add in the compost and the fertilizer at the time you're cultivating the soil. And then I plant my annuals in the way that I want them, usually in a swath or groups of four like a diamond or three like a triangle. And then I put the bulbs in between, like the freesias and the ranunculus and the anemones. I'll put those in between the tall annuals, because if you plant a whole row of bulbs, they're going to sit there for several months before you see any green. Then you're going to see green, and then you're going to see green for another month or two before you finally see flowers. So that's why I like to plant the bulbs in between the annual flowers that already have flowers on them when you buy six packs of them, right? And that way you've got flowers the whole season right from the day that you planted your bed.
You know, and that's one of the things I love about your garden, Tina, is that whenever I come to your house, there's something's going off all the time. And you plant between and around, and it's just amazing how your garden can look beautiful all year long if you do these things.
Yeah, these are just little tips, you know, and in the fall my garden doesn't look that great, but
in my opinion,
usually
your garden looks better than almost 99.9%.
Oh, thanks.
Because you do that.
But these are the things I've discovered over time, and it's really not that hard to, you know, pop your bulbs in between your flowers, and then you're going to have flowers for a much longer time. And then, of course, you have your perennial flowers, and then those are going to fill in at certain times of year.
And
then
your blooming
shrubs and your roses. And so hopefully through the planting of a variety of those things, your camellias, your azaleas, your sages, all those things that bloom maybe at different times of year, hopefully you'll have something blooming all year long, because it's super fun to have something.
It really is.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes when you plant even the annuals, or excuse me, the perennials, you don't have to do any work. You know, and they're blooming in the fall or in the or winter. And it's just nice to have something going on.
Right. And the cool thing is, you can do all of these things in containers. Just make sure when you choose a shrub or a perennial that it's something that you're going to put either in a big container, like I love flax in containers, and then you can edge the flax with bacopa or something that's going to drape over the edges and look really pretty, or a succulent, you know, that's going to drape over the edges. So there's just so many things you can do both in the ground and in pots. Pretty much anything we're talking about in the ground you can do in a pot. But just remember, bigger is better when it comes to pots.
And you have to water them.
Yes.
So I'm not really good at that.
That's why bigger is better, because you water it once, and because there's a lot of soil, it's going to stay moist. Whereas if it's a small pot, of course, it's going to dry out much faster.
And sometimes you could put pots inside a pot to give them a little bit of insulation.
I love that idea. That's,
you know, keep the ground cooler or the soil cooler.
Well, and the other thing, too, is you can use the plastic pots. Maybe you bought something and it came in a plastic pot and it's doing great. Why transplant it? Just drop that plastic pot into a decorative ceramic or clay pot.
And it looks beautiful.
Yeah, it looks really good.
And put a little bit of mulch around it, or put a little bit something else around it, add some plants around it, and it looks beautiful.
Speaking of mulch, Katrina said the magic M word. After you plant your shrubs and perennials and annuals, it is a good idea to mulch them. If it's a permanent bed area with, you know, permanent shrubs, you can use a coarse mulch like bark chips. But if it's like a flower bed that you know you're going to be turning over seasonally, you don't want to use the big bark chips. Instead, use a bag of compost to mulch it, because you don't want those big chunky things getting turned in your soil when you go to replant. And then the last thing, actually two more things to talk about in the decorative garden. The first one is, if you want to transform part of your garden into a water thrifty or native garden, This is the time of year to get ready to do that. Probably want to start waiting until November to actually plant, but I sure would get ready this month and pick out, design the plants that I'm going to use. The reason you might want to wait till November is the native plants in particular, their bloom and growth cycle is based on when we get rain. And so when do we get rain? It starts in November. So that's the best time to plant those plants, is end of October, beginning of November.
Okay, and if you're thinking about doing that, make sure you plant like for like. Whatever your spring watering system is, unless you plan on doing it, take a section, because you can't have drought-tolerant plants with plants that take a lot of water. So be conscious of that you plant whatever you're planting in your water, in the sprinkler system or in whatever system you have, plant like for like.
Absolutely. So if you want to change out zone 3, you need to put all drought tolerant stuff in the zone 3 area of your sprinkler system. You know, each station has a number on your sprinkler system. Just remember to turn that station number 1 or 2 or 3 on, see which sprinklers are coming on, and realize that in that area you have to have the same water use plants. So if you're going for the drought tolerant plants, make sure that you don't mix in pansies with your drought-tolerant plants, because they're not going to be happy.
Exactly. You know, we have at our house, before we became master gardeners and I realized any of this stuff, is that we have a fern garden underneath our deck. And it gets shade, it doesn't need a lot of water, but on the same watering system is another bed that I have that bakes in the sun.
Well, that was bad planning for that... landscape architect, huh?
Exactly. And I've been dealing with that for years. You know, sometimes I take my hose out, or I'm trying to take more water tolerant plants there. So it's not only like for like, but check out how much sun you get.
Good point. Yeah, the sun exposure is really
because
important.
If I water enough for the ferns, then I kill a lot of other plants in my yard.
Yeah.
So I've had to adjust what I'm planting in that, because we really like the beautiful ferns, and it's just pretty. It's underneath the deck. We don't get sun there. It works perfect for that, but I had to adjust my other planting bed because it was on my brand new watering system.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. So, you know, you live and learn, but you kind of have to pay attention. And then also in my yard, I have more sun in the winter, my front yard, than I do in the summer, because I have these big trees. In the summertime, it shades everything, but in the winter, I get a lot more sun, which sounds counterintuitive, but it is what it is.
It's the angle of the sun in the sky.
Well, it's also, you know, I have a jacaranda, and I have a maple.
Oh, so they're deciduous.
They're
yeah.
deciduous. So
yeah.
In the summertime, I have ferns that do great, but they burn in the winter.
Yeah.
So pay attention to what you're planting where and what trees you have around it and the angle of the sun. And learn from my mistakes. You know, I was clueless. I didn't think about these things. And, you know, I'm still dealing with them many years later, because it was so expensive to do what we did and to change it up. I just had to adjust my planting.
Right. It's often cheaper to change the plants than to try and put in a new irrigation system. So... But as Katrina said, if just a little bit of planning and, you know, a little bit of Googling, and talk to some good nursery people and you'll...
Check out other people's yards.
Yeah.
You can learn from what they do.
Yeah, exactly.
Or what worked for them and what didn't. You know, there's a house not too far from us that I just went and took pictures because it was perfect. It's like, I want what they have. And they did my homework for me.
Why recreate the wheel, right?
They did it, and it's lasted for years, and I'm like, I really like that. And, you know, some of the plants I knew, and a few of them I didn't, and I went to the nursery and said, what are they? You know, and they helped me identify a few that I didn't know. And
that's great.
Learn from other people.
Yeah, for sure. Well, before we leave the decorative garden, one last thing that I would suggest, if you have some areas that you are perhaps adjacent to open space, or maybe it's an area that you don't want to actively plant, you know, maybe a strip along a driveway or something, consider wildflowers. This is also the time of year to sow our state flower, California poppies. And there's nothing like a strip of California poppies to make everyone on your block smile. So, or even just throw, if you like kind of a natural look garden, even just throw poppy seeds in as you're planting your new shrubs and perennials, etc. And you've now turned the soil, so you've got some nice loose soil. Just when you're done, throw handfuls of the seeds out and just see what happens. You'll end up with these little patches of California poppies throughout your garden. And if you don't, I mean, if you like a super, you know, manicured look, that may not be for you. But I know it just makes me so happy when I see random little piles of California poppies.
I love my husband does two things in my garden for me: the California poppies, and I walk down my hill and I see them, and it's like he hasn't done much work, but it's a way that he shows his love. And every time I see them, I smile. You know, it's just, and he says, well, I just threw them out years ago.
Yeah.
And they just keep coming back.
Yeah.
And they're beautiful. You know, if you have enough space or whatever works for you.
Right.
But it's really, when I come to your neighborhood, Tina, and I see all the poppies, they make me smile.
Yeah, our community association, because we live near open space, actually sprays the seed mixture on the main street that goes through the community. And so, when you drive through in the springtime, and they last until it gets really hot, so they bloom until about the end of June or so, from like February to June, and it just makes everyone smile, because I don't know, there's just something about those orange poppies that bring a smile to everyone's face.
Oh, they're wonderful.
So do if you can find a spot. You know, a package of seeds is a couple of bucks, and if they don't come up, then oh well. Well, I've spent almost the whole show on talking about our decorative garden, but let's do talk briefly about our veggie gardens this time of year, because this is when you want to switch out to cool season plants. So you probably maybe have a few straggling tomatoes, peppers, squash, beans. Now's the time to rip them out, unless, like me, you want to keep that one scraggly tomato plant because it still has green tomatoes on it. But otherwise, clean out your veggie garden and get ready to plant all of the lettuces, all of the cole crops, which means broccoli, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts, all broccolini, all of those, the peas, all of the varieties of peas, whether they're pole, the ones that grow up on trellises, or the bush peas, the snap peas, or the ones that you shell, and then all of your root vegetables, carrots, beets, turnips, if you like turnips, plant radishes. So in the winter, in general, just think roots and leaves, the lettuces, the spinaches, arugula, all of that stuff, and then peas and cole crops. Those are what you want to plant in the winter.
I love winter vegetable gardens.
I actually like it better, except for tomatoes, which I adore. But I actually like the winter veggie garden
too.
Better. Yeah.
And, you know, here's a hint. I don't know how much room everybody has, but don't plant 12 broccoli at the same time, or 12 whatever, or a six-pack. I plant like a couple, and then a couple weeks later, I plant some more. And it's just, I've done that before, and everything comes ripe at the same time, and I can't eat it all. So if I plant a little bit often, then I have a crop that keeps coming up, and then we were able to eat out of our garden.
Absolutely. So, and remember on your lettuces, they are super easy to grow from seed, especially this time of year when the soil is warm. But you can also buy them in six packs. And the advantage for six packs is that you can start harvesting almost immediately. So I usually put them in the ground, wait a week or two, and then you start harvesting those outer leaves and make your salads with the outer leaves. Leave the inner core leaves, because that's where the new leaves are produced, and your head will just keep, you know, getting more and more leaves, and you just keep picking the outer leaves for your salads. And that way, I've had lettuce plants keep feeding me for like 6 months until the weather gets warm and they bolt.
You know, and another thing is, if you don't have room for a vegetable garden, plant some stuff with your flowers and your plants. because they do look pretty. And you can go, I've planted cabbages and cauliflower next to my roses. You know, you can. It's okay to do that. You don't have to separate them.
We give you permission.
You don't have to separate them. And so you don't have room for a vegetable garden. Stick some vegetables with your flowers.
Or in pots.
There's a lot of different ways to do that. And, you know, and it really sets people off because I've had people come to my house and going, what is that plant or what is that flower? And I'm like, what are you talking about? And I go outside and it's a vegetable. They're just not used to seeing the vegetable next to the salvia.
Right.
You know, but it's okay.
Yeah.
You know, and it's okay to do that. And we've actually, my biggest problem is they look so pretty that sometimes I don't want to pick them.
Yeah.
You know, and I have to watch the big ones because I'm like, oh, it takes up a lot and it's gorgeous. And you know, my husband wants to pick it. And I'm like, no, it looks really pretty in the flower garden. So you could find places to do it, either plant it in your flower garden or, like Tina said, pots. You could do a lot in pots.
And you can actually do pots. We think of the vegetables as things that have to be relegated someplace where we don't see them because sometimes vegetable gardens are messy. But here's a couple of things I've done with vegetable pots on my back patio, which have just been so fun. If you get 3 bamboo stakes and, you know, make a little teepee by poking them at or spaced around the edge of the pot and then bringing the tops together and tying it with twine, you can plant some pea seeds on either side of those bamboo poles and the pea plant will twine up it. But then in between, I like to plant pansies in maybe a bright yellow color. And then you have this beautiful vine, which eventually, when it's ready, will produce white flowers, which is what the pea pod comes from. And so you have this vine with these little white flowers on and these beautiful yellow pansies down at the base, and that's pretty enough to put on your patio. It's not ugly at all.
You can put it by your front door. You can put it anywhere you want.
You can do lettuces. You can get a six-pack of purple lettuce and a six-pack of that lime green lettuce and get a nice big round pot and do the outer edge in the, you know, bright green and put the purple in the middle, and that's a beautiful pot to look at. So don't think that you have to, you know, hide them, or if you have a small place and you can't hide them, that they have to be ugly. They actually can be quite attractive and be decorative for your patios.
Beautiful. And, you know, I love sending my family and friends going for dinner, go pick something.
Yeah, you've heard sing for your supper. Well, here you have to pick for your supper.
And it's education. You know, it's great for kids. It's greater for, and people enjoy that. They go, you've grown this? And, you know, it's like, it's yours. And you put it on your table and you eat it and you know what's gone into it. You know, you know what chemicals or no chemicals that are in there. And it's really kind of neat.
It's funny you say that. I had some family friends whose daughter got married, and I like to give as a shower present or a housewarming present. I think this was a housewarming present. I plant a strawberry pot, which is one of those pots that have holes all around the sides, and I plant those with herbs, and you can get, you know, like a dozen different herbs in one strawberry pot. And I gave it to them as a housewarming present, and I just saw her at somebody else's baby shower, and she had to tell me, to your point of how exciting it is to eat something that you grew, she had to tell me that they are so excited because they used basil all summer long, they made pesto from their herb pot, and she's learned how to cook with, you know, other fresh herbs like thyme and marjoram that she never had cooked with before because they were in her herb pot. So it really is inspiring to plant a few things. Doesn't have to be a lot. It can be in a simple single pot. But how fun is it and how rewarding to eat what you actually grew?
Yes. I love it. I love it. You know, in my neighborhood, sometimes we have a little extra. So I have a gate out front, and sometimes I come home and there's bags on the gate where my neighbor has given me something, or I take and leave it for somebody else because I have too much.
What a great neighborhood.
It's wonderful. And it's like we share, and it's treasures. And some people don't grow anything, and you give them like fresh tomatoes or fresh lettuce or whatever it is, and it's a treasure.
It is. Really, they're so grateful for it. Yeah. Unless it's zucchini, and if you've been bombarding them with zucchini all summer, they may hide when you...
They roll up their windows and they don't pretend they don't see you.
How much time do we have left?
Oh, we just have a couple minutes.
The last thing I'd like to mention to people, because I know I didn't know this before I became a master gardener, and that's about lawns. Some of us still have some lawns in our yard, and what we need to find out about our lawns, if we have them, is whether they're warm season or cool season lawns. I have a cool season lawn. That's a fescue. A lot of us have fescue lawns, and what you do with those is you want to lower the height of your mower. We raised the height of our mower so that the leaves would shade the roots and conserve water over the summer. But you can lower the mower a little bit or tell your gardener to. And the other thing that you want to do this time of year, if your lawn is kind of compacted, is to go ahead and aerate it. And you can do that if you have a small lawn with a tool that kind of has like a shovel handle on it with bars that go across. And then at the very bottom of it, it has two posts that are about a half inch in diameter and maybe 4 to 6 inches long. And you actually step on it to make these posts go in the ground and put little holes in the ground. And what that does is that allows air to get back down to the roots if your soil has become compacted. If you have big lawns, then you can rent an aerating machine because it would take you forever to do it with the little hand tool. And then after you do that, it's a great idea for your cool season lawns to fertilize them this time of year because they like to grow in cool weather, not hot weather. But if you have a warm season lawn like St. Augustine, you don't want to fertilize in the winter because they go a little bit dormant and you just need to let them rest over the winter. So anyway, just wanted to get that in because I know a lot of folks haven't got a clue what kind of lawn they have, and so they might not be fertilizing properly.
And if you don't know, you could take a little piece, some of your grass to your local nursery and ask them, do I have a cool or warm season?
Absolutely.
And they're more than willing to help you out, and they'll tell you what to do and when to do it. So last couple minutes, Tina, any last minute?
Oh, okay. Ooh, always fun to have just a touch more time. Well, this is the month when we often have Halloween get-togethers, and it's a very fun time for kids and kids of all ages. So let's just talk for a second about maybe making a succulent pumpkin, because such a fun fall decoration.
Fun fall thing to do.
And when you make a succulent pumpkin, you actually aren't really planting the succulents. You are just laying them, gluing their stems actually into some moss that you, Spanish moss that you put on the top. So what you'll need is you'll need a real pumpkin. And you'll need a package of Spanish moss. You'll need some spray glue and a glue gun. And then you'll need lots of cuttings of succulents. So if you have some in your yard, go out there and you probably need, oh gosh, at least a dozen, maybe two dozen, depending on the size of your pumpkin. And you just want to have, just break off a piece of that succulent and have like a half an inch of stem. And what you're going to do is spray the top of the pumpkin with the spray glue, pull out some of that moss, smash it on top of the glue just so it sticks. Then you just take a pencil and you put your little pencil and make a little space in the moss, but don't poke your pumpkin itself because then it could start rotting. And then you want to put either white glue on the end of your succulent and stick it in there. Or you can use a glue gun to do the same thing.
I like the glue gun. It works fast.
It sticks better. With the white glue, sometimes they start to fall out, and then you have to hold them in there. And then you're done. And it doesn't matter. I've done this with a garden club, and everybody's looks different, and it doesn't matter what you put in. They all look beautiful.
And you can Google it to find out more of how to do it. And with that, we're at the end of our show.
Thanks for listening, and happy planting in October.
And we'll see you in November.